This is Future Water, where we talk about all the ways in which companies, utilities, and people are addressing challenges and opportunities in water. Today, it's all about wastewater epidemiology. This is Rhys Tisdale. But before I begin, I wanted to call out a couple things. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you know that Bluefield has launched The Future of Water, albeit softly. The Future of Water is really to highlight interesting news and topics that our team of Bluefield Research is uncovering through our daily processes. So feel free to subscribe to that. We'll be rolling out more going forward. That being said, also another thing I wanted to call out, now that we have this medium, the podcast, I wanted to give a shout out to Dave McGimsey, who we've been working with for a long time. He's the best in the water podcast business, and he's got intriguing interviews with water industry experts on a range of topics. Also, his archive is deep, and I know he continues to attract a number of great guests. It's a good resource just for your own water interests. So subscribe to the Water Values podcast as well on all podcast platforms. With that being said, so today I'm joined by Keith Hayes, one of my partners at Bluefield. Keith, how's it going?
It's going all right, Rhys. Under the circumstances, we're holding up over here. How are you doing?
Pretty good. It is a Monday. It's always sort of weird to go into a Monday after a weekend just sitting at home wondering, what did I do? So speaking of, Keith, you're in Barcelona. What's going on with COVID over there? I mean, you guys, at one point, I'm in Boston, obviously. You guys are a step ahead of us, or were a step ahead of us. You're getting a little bit of rebound.
Yeah, it looks that way. I think that there's a lot of nervousness right now because the virus, the pandemic was pretty much under control as of May. They started rolling back some of the confinement, the quarantine measures, and they really were starting to let people get out there and enjoy the sunshine, and summer was starting, but I think everybody was concerned once you start opening the economy. Spain is about 15% of its economy is based on tourism, so they couldn't keep all the tourists out for the whole summer. So now tourists have come. Now that locals have left the city to go to their beach houses or whatever, we've got little outbreaks starting to crop up all over the country. It started out in two or three provinces now. A few hot spots are in Aragon, Lleida, and here in Barcelona. So we're all trying to be careful, wearing the mask, and we're all hoping this thing will end sooner rather than later.
I mean, it feels like a century ago. I mean, there was one point I remember, like, even like your son, he couldn't even leave the house for like a month and a half.
Yeah, we were all buckled down. I think we all got to know each other a little bit better. Or for worse.
Everybody thinks it's bad, but when you can't cross the threshold of the front door for a month and a half, that's when it gets out of hand.
We were locked down here. I think we were on the heels of Italy and took it very seriously. And it's no joke. I mean, tens of thousands of people have died here. The healthcare system reacted pretty well, I would say. I mean, they had to set up some makeshift hospitals as they have elsewhere. But I think we're all searching for ways out of this. And as you were starting to allude to before, one of them could be being able to detect this better through wastewater-based epidemiology.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, we could talk about COVID all day, but I think this is actually pretty timely. Some of the research you've been doing, and you talked to a number of companies recently about wastewater epidemiology. So apropos COVID and our business, water, wastewater, what is wastewater epidemiology?
Right. So wastewater-based epidemiology, sometimes you see it referred to as WBE. What it is it's taking samples of untreated effluent, so before it goes through the treatment plant, and testing it to see if it contains viruses. And so really, I mean, epidemiology, there are different vectors in which a virus can move. And yet the thinking here is that in wastewater, it sends a signal. There is a strong enough signal in people's wastewater leaving their houses, gray water, that would provide some indicator as to the level of infection rate in a population, how recent it is, how intense it is. And so this has been around for a while, but applying it to COVID-19 has become particularly urgent.
I mean, it's basically just pooling, right? I mean, you know, that sort of same thing that labs are doing. You take a number of different samples, pool it together, but I don't want to get out over my skis here talking about epidemiology. I'll leave that to other people in my family to do. But that being said, what's interesting is it's been around for a while, right? I know there are companies, one actually out of MIT that was looking, at least started out looking at opioids, right? And sort of figuring out where opioids were being used more heavily and by neighborhood in certain areas. And what's happened is the pandemic has come and it's evolved or quickly transitioned into an opportunity. I don't know. We can get into like whether it's going to help the problem now or in the future or other pandemics. But do you have any good examples that are interesting that prove the solution out?
First, it's interesting to think about who are the key stakeholders here. So what is kind of the context in which wastewater-based epidemiology is being applied, right? Because it's different from testing mosquitoes somewhere or blood testing elsewhere or testing the wastewater, it involves a particular set of stakeholders, right? So you've got your public health officials. Those could be county administrators. They could be city mayors. These are people who are struggling with what do we do to keep citizens safe and figure out what the hell's going on. And ideally, you have a strong national or federal response from the government, which is giving you a certain protocol of what to do. That's not always the case. And so this could be a tool for them to understand if in the wastewater we can see some level of contagion, we can act on it. And the sooner we know about it, the better. Then you've got the where you're actually taking the wastewater from. So there's the wastewater asset operators, right? So that's going and dealing with either it's a public or private municipal utility that is operating the sewer and or the wastewater treatment plant and figuring out, okay, where can we grab samples here? And it's very important where you grab the sample as well. So there needs to be discussion there about, you know, can we test this? How often we test it? And then you've got the laboratories. So you need to have laboratories set up that you can quickly turn around those samples and figure out what that says in terms of the amount of the concentration of or virus shedding and the strength of the signal that you're getting in the water. But you need certain equipment to do that. You need to be able to turn it around, and not all laboratories in a country are able to do that. And then you've got other companies that are trying to facilitate. So, you know, you're asking about companies here, and there are companies that are trying to develop specific workflows for looking for COVID-19, which is unique. And it has been done before. And you asked me about examples, and I'd say the most clear example, I would say, I mean, yes, looking at opioids has been happening for a while. A company called BioBot Analytics that you were referring to out of Cambridge has been working on that. But going back further, I would say around 2014 in Israel actually had lost its polio-free status from the WHO because there was an outbreak in part of the country. And so what they did to detect polio was set up sensors and start taking wastewater for testing up in the sewer system. And from there, they were able to, within a matter of weeks, localize where the outbreak was and pretty much get everybody vaccinated, and it was gone. And so based on that experience in 2014, the Israelis actually pretty soon this year started setting up a protocol for testing their wastewater. So the most recent example of detecting a virus and stopping an outbreak would probably be Israel a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. And then, I mean, you've been looking at this for a while, and we're talking about it internally, about what does this mean, you know, how real is it? But even in, I mean, I think one of the points you had brought up in some of the research you had released was about Barcelona specifically. I mean, they saw this before, or they were uncovered some COVID even before the first case was identified, right?
There's a lot of speculation right now, which we're trying to get more empirical evidence around the timeline for this pandemic, because I think we've already heard that probably there were cases even going back to October, perhaps in Wuhan in China. They found in, I believe it was February this year, they found in Barcelona's wastewater evidence of COVID-19. But then they actually unfroze some samples going back months. and said that even as far back as in the first quarter of 2019, there was COVID-19 in the wastewater. So that makes you think there must be a lot of unfreezing of wastewater samples happening all over the place right now.
That makes me think about a lot of things, but...
Why are they freezing it? And but it's a kind of archaeology, if you want to call it that, to try and figure out where this thing started. You know, everybody's pointing fingers at China, but, you know, is it possible that it came from elsewhere? And the other thing is, there are different strains of the virus, right? So depending on these different strains, could that have led to different paths of evolution as well? And that says something else as well about how the virus has spread.
So what about commercially speaking? I mean, you mentioned BioBot. They're a startup, right? I mean, but there are real players that are doing this globally, right?
Yeah. So one way to think about it is there are different parts of the value chain. And so let's say we're talking about kind of an end-to-end management of the process for testing and interpreting the results, right? But there's sort of three key parts to it from the research that we've done. One is optimizing the sampling of the wastewater in terms of the sampling point to capture the best signal possible. It matters where you put it, right? You want to get as close to populations as possible. You want to try and isolate the sample from any noise you might get in terms of industrial effluent. There's been a lot of sampling of wastewater treatment plants that are near hospitals. And that's ideal in terms of trying to get closer at a population that may be sick, but at the same time, trying to get it out into a broader sewer network is interesting over the longer term to be able to pinpoint it. Then there's also the time of day question, you know, to get the best concentration of the virus. And there's still a lot of experimentation going on about virus shedding and how it sheds into feces and how much of a concentration you need, how many copies of the RNA of the virus do you need to actually detect the signal. That all feeds into the protocols around sampling, right? So time of day in the morning, when there's more people putting more into the sewer network, that's probably ideal. There are temperature factors, there are flow factors. So it's very important to get it right in terms of the sampling. So that's one aspect of it. And there are different companies out there. Kando is an Israeli firm that has an interesting sampling platform in terms of the way that they lay it out, how they pick where they put it on the system, and how they coordinate with the laboratory. So that the second part of it is the laboratory. And so there's the testing via real-time polymerase chain reaction, which labs need to have a machine set up. In some countries, it's a big deal when they get these machines and how quickly they can centrifuge and end up with a pellet that they can test for the virus concentration. So that's another part of it. There's the whole laboratory industry around this. And then thirdly, and I think where most importantly, we're seeing a lot of the action, let's say, is around the modeling and interpreting of the results. So it's in that part where companies are trying to find a correlation between what we're seeing with direct PCR testing or antibody testing with what you're seeing in the wastewater. And it's correlating those two numbers, then also looking at population movements. That all is supporting the determination of, okay, how long has the virus been here? How much has it spiked? And trying to actually project or extrapolate from that how many people have it now, right? So the firms that have kind of come out in front with solutions around this, one of them, actually, they're both Spanish. I'm not just saying that because I live in Spain, but you've got Go Agua or Global Omniums Technology Carve Out. So this is a company that offers a broad range of digital solutions. They did a pilot testing for COVID-19 around Valencia and Murcia, so in sort of southeastern Spain, and successfully detected the virus there and were able to tweak it, working with one of the universities and local laboratories. And so they've already been going to market with that. I know we've seen them lately trying to make a push into the U.S. offering to start evaluating wastewater samples. The second Spanish company I'm referring to is the Spanish subsidiary of Suez. So Suez is a gigantic French water technology and services provider that most of people listening know about. Suez launched their solution, which they're calling City Sentinel, And this is a combination as well of providing field services in terms of where to place the sampling point. They're doing the results interpretation and providing guidance as to how to keep that testing program up and running. And then after that, there's some different companies and different laboratory and university collaborations out there that are still going.
So you've put together for our clients a list of studies and pilots, if you will. So would you say we're still closer to the academic and pilot stage than we are to commercialization?
You know, these solutions are already on the market. They've been tested in Spain. I think, though, this is very much still a learning process because these models require a lot of fine-tuning. And what's important right now is that a body of data is being created. So BioBot Analytics in the States, I think they've said they're in over 40 states now. So dozens of cities are sending their wastewater samples. They're getting better and better at being able to extrapolate from the virus pellet that they're getting out of the wastewater. What does that mean in terms of the population? I think the challenge, though, is trying to break down some of those, let's say, information silos. So trying to get more information about how the sewer system is working. So what kind of interference there might be in the network in terms of the sample. There's also just coordinating with cities and different departments within a city government to figure out about population movements and how that may be impacting it as well and the composition of the population. And so it's still a process right now of fine-tuning the models, but the signal has been detected. It does work. The question is, how accurate is it? And the huge upside of this and why it's worth doing it is because we may be able to go from putting an entire city into quarantine to just quarantining maybe a block or a building. And that obviously has massive economic upside for a local economy and not having to shut down the entire economy, but really limiting movement in a certain place and keeping the rest open and being a lot more surgical and smarter about how we manage quarantines and lockdowns.
Yeah, that's the huge benefit at a local level, but even within a state and or region. I think that's what happened in the US early on, right? Everything, you know, it's like we need to shut down things. Shut down, albeit with different mandates at a state level. And, you know, the South really wasn't going through much, right? They weren't detecting a lot early days while the Northeast was getting crushed, New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, among others. But yeah, it's to start isolating it. That's what it's all about. That's sort of the battle today is, you know, how do you control the virus and manage the economy at the same time so it doesn't collapse? Which maybe that's a good question for you is we're talking about COVID, touched upon opioids, but there are a number of different applications that this could be used for. So, I mean, what should we look for, you know, trend-wise, or what should we keep an eye out going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think going forward, we should expect these models are obviously going to get better. It's going to be kind of a common thing, I think, to have this sort of lab testing done on cities' wastewater. But I think what's going to be really interesting is when we start moving, because most of the sampling right now is happening at the wastewater treatment plant level. And that's been done for two reasons. One, because they wanted to prove the effluent coming out of a wastewater treatment plant is free of the virus so that we're not discharging treated wastewater that still has the virus out into the environment. But then also trying to check if it has COVID in the raw wastewater coming in. So that's great, but really it becomes interesting when you can move further up into the sewer system. And that's a bit trickier because there you're dealing with a lot of different variables in terms of how sewer systems are configured and how they flow. And it definitely conditions those different parameters that we're looking for at the sampling point. But I think moving up pipe with the testing is going to be a huge development. So, you know, I think we're going to expect more happening on that end, just in terms of what they're trying to do with these solutions. There will definitely be more companies coming in here because I think there are different ways probably to optimize both how the modeling is done, how the sewer networks are being understood, because there's still a lot to be learned in terms of how contaminants move through a sewer system. And part of my research process, I talked to a lot of folks, sewer network operators in the Great Lakes region, for instance, in the US, saying that, you know, it's really difficult to understand how different contaminants move through sewer networks. So to say that you're going to find this needle in a haystack with COVID all the time is not easy. So, you know, I think the improvement of the models, the location of the sampling points, there's a lot of companies out there, sensor manufacturers, there's sampling solutions companies. There will be more sort of big data solutions applied to this to try and learn how this virus is moving through the system.
Yeah, I think, and this is one of the bigger discussions that we had when we really started looking at this in more detail, and that was, well, how to pay for it or who's going to pay for it. And maybe it's, I think what we came up with was, well, there are a lot of wastewater systems in the US, let alone the world, right? At the local and state level. So who's incentivized to do it? And does a governmental authority have to step in and say, this would be really useful to better understand what's happening and therefore impose the idea upon the states? Or is it, and to that point, is it just better suited for more centralized authorities, maybe in Europe and places like that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think this has been a public health crisis and it should be managed by public health officials listening to science, right? And that means that, you know, mayors, county administrators, governors, all should probably be taking a look at this. And that's ultimately where the funding is going to come for this probably. And why are they going to cough up the money for this if it's not regulated? Well, because we've seen the havoc that a virus like this can wreak on a local economy. And so it seems worth it, you know, as we clean up the wreckage of what's happened over the last several months, you know, maybe for a reasonable cost. And, you know, right now I saw that West Center, which is a lab at the University of Arizona, they're charging about $1,200 per sample. There are other solutions, I think BioBot Analytics for four samples, they're charging about $2,300 to have them processed, which is still pretty high for processing a sample of wastewater. So the cost is definitely going to have to come down.
Yeah, on the back end of that. And it is hard, right? It's like, well, what's the value of having that information? Like you said, if you can start, you know, nailing down neighborhoods to say, look, here, there's a problem here that we need to manage it more tightly. And then there are the economic impacts. So,
yeah, I mean, just as all kinds of different equipment are inside a city budget, this may be something, an ongoing service that you have. I guess the question is, you know, there have been times in the past, you know, where when something recedes, you don't necessarily pay attention to it. So how do you convince the government, I think, for this to be an ongoing thing? And I think the concern will be, let's say 2 years from now, we have a vaccine for COVID-19 that's working fairly well. Do governments sort of take their foot off the pedal or relax? And we all know that this virus may be able to mutate. It may be that antibodies will or will not last and you can be reinfected. And so, you know, how safe are we? And if we stay vigilant, this may be a tool that forms part of that.
I'm freewheeling a little bit here, but if you think about it commercially, this is a little sort of big brother, even a little scarier, is can you start looking at wastewater using similar technology and figuring out, hey, what are people eating? What are people drinking? You know, and then you start thinking about it from commercially, from a market-based economy, aside from pandemics, you know, does some big company start using data like that to figure out, oh, well, maybe we should put a Whole Foods here, or maybe we should put.
There are a lot of decisions that you can think about.
Oh, brother, man. That's scary. It's really creepy. But I honestly never thought about it till right now in that way. And I guess I should have. Well, that being said, I mean, I think like a lot of the stuff we look at, we can wind it down. A lot of the stuff we look at in the water industry, it's really not a technology issue. I mean, this is a good example of a technology that does exist. It needs to be proven out in the field as well as from a business model perspective. But it's there, right? And that's, we hear that over and over in the water sector, and it's really a business model, how to pay for things and get it out there. So anything else, Keith, we can wrap it up?
No, I mean, I hope that, you know, some of the coordination we're seeing in Europe and some of these European companies getting to the US, that we all
because one of the things that's going to make this develop a lot faster is if there's a lot more collaboration across countries, you know, and hopefully we're past the point where this was a Chinese virus or a thing happening in Italy. I think it now has hit the States, it's hit a lot of different countries. We're all in this together, and it's actually a huge opportunity for scientists and technologists to step up and really make an impact here with something that could probably save a lot of lives.
All right, there you go, everybody. That's the glass half full perspective. They're hard to come by these days. So, all right, Keith, thanks for stepping up. Stay well, stay safe, and we'll talk soon.
You too. Take care, Reese.
All right, thanks. All right, this podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by Bluefield Research, which is advancing water strategies and decisions globally. You can always learn more at bluefieldresearch.com. But also, don't forget to subscribe to The Future of Water on all those podcast platforms, whichever one you use or prefer. Look out for more of these in the future, and everybody, we'll talk soon. Be well, be safe, be kind.